Blog Talk Radio.
The sun go down and lulls us to our sleep. Beloved, who makes the earth so round about the sun to sweep. Mother, who speaks her words in the silent moonlit night above.
Saturday morning, and this is Blog Talk Radio, the Cosmic Citizen, and my name is Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friends, Crystalline Beek Larson and Andre Rodatis. Hi, you guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Paula.
Good morning. Andre coming all the way from Quebec, Canada, which is wonderful, and Crystalline, of course, and I both live here in Boulder, Colorado, or the area. We have a great show today. We're doing a whole show on Urantia Study Group's leadership training and networking, something very dear to all of our hearts. And right now we have another guest from Montreal with us, who is the president of the Urantia Association International for 8 years now. He started attending the Urantia Study Groups in 1987. I believe he started reading the book in 1979. And he's just one of those people in the Urantia movement that is a true mover and shaker and a true leader. He's been instrumental in helping the UAI to develop study groups and a whole leadership program in that regard. So please welcome Gaetan Charlan to the show. Hi, Gaetan.
Hi, Paula. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Good morning,
Gaetan.
Bienvenue.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
So, you know, we have, Crystal, I'll let you kind of explain the premise of the show today and get us started. I know this is something that you've wanted to do for quite a while. And we all feel like study groups are vitally important to the social infrastructure of the Urantia movement. I've been going
Absolutely.
To study groups since 78, so and it's made all the difference in the world to me.
I started in study groups, you know, in the car with my family as a kid. You know, it always took a long time to get anywhere in West Africa. And so we spent a lot of time in the car, and that's where we first started our family study groups. And then after moving to the States, my parents had a study group in our home. My brother and I were involved peripherally, but wasn't until I was out of college that I really became passionate about study groups and moved to Colorado to attend the Boulder School. But I've always felt that study groups were really the place where the real leaders in our movement were being developed, and Andre and I had a conversation after a program he went to a couple weeks ago, and I thought this sounded like the perfect time to invite Gaetan to join us. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Andre, about... We're getting a lot of background noise. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
Andre...
Hello, Andre.
Yes, good morning. Well, it was just not more than a couple of Saturdays ago that I went down to the town of actually more like a small city of Saint-Jérôme in Quebec, and it's about 45 minutes by car, maybe not quite that far, it depends on the traffic, 30 minutes northwest of Montreal, and about 45 minutes from where I'm currently living in Saint-Faustin-Lac-Carré in Quebec, and decided to go down to a Quebec study group leaders meeting. And wasn't sure what kind of a meeting it was going to be. Wasn't sure exactly what was going to go on. Just heard that, for one thing, it was going to bring together people who were study group leaders here in the province of Quebec. And for the geographically challenged, and there are plenty of people who don't know just how vast the province of Quebec is, and like most of Canada, you know, about the southern portion of Quebec is the most heavily populated, but that's still a fairly large region. So there were people coming from, I'm not sure how far away, but I know that Quebec City is 3.5 hours from Saint-Jérôme, and there may have been some people that came a little further than that to get to this meeting. So I didn't know what to expect, but I was expecting to find some kind of gathering, formal or informal, and frankly, I was going to be happy just if people were getting together informally, and I, with my very intermediate French, would just get to fellowship with some study group leaders. When I arrived, I arrived there just a trifle late, you know, having trouble getting out the door that morning, and got over there, and in full session, there standing at the front of the room was Gaetan, and he was leading a full-blown workshop on how to lead a study group, and I encountered him leading the workshop, but not only that, it started at about 10 that morning. I think I got there about 10:30. It went fully till about noon before we broke for lunch. I think noon, almost 12:30, we broke for lunch. We went to a close restaurant together. Practically everybody went to eat together over at a Saint-Hubert, which is like a very nice restaurant which serves, you know, chicken, very many things. But we got to socialize, meet each other, have lunch together, then came back and continued a wonderful workshop, which was added to then by Alain Nielsen and Chantel, I forget Chantel's last name, or at least I know I would mispronounce it. There, in other words, a number of people had been brought in to co-lead this and present a lot of valuable information on how to set up a study group. And not only how to set up a study group, but how to make it dynamic. before everybody left, and by the way, everybody got to meet each other and discuss things with each other, discuss what they thought was important in a study group. And one of the key words used in putting together a study group, among other adjectives, one of the key ones was dynamic. How do you make it dynamic? How do you put it together so that people will want to come and enjoy coming?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of it all, I was quite impressed with the fact that, number one, here in Quebec, in a language other than the original language of the Urantia book, which shouldn't seem like a big thing, but it still is a big thing because there are many, many unilingual readers of the Urantia book who read it in English, will probably only ever read it in English, and will frankly be cut off from a knowledge of how many other places in the world are studying the Urantia book and not studying it in the original language of the Urantia book and getting out as much from the Urantia book as English Anglophone readers get out of studying the original Urantia book. And actually going further than I have ever seen anyone go in trying to make a coordinated effort to instruct and train leaders of the Urantia book that I've ever seen in my 36 years of studying the book and my 34 years of attending study group. So I came away knowing that I wanted to participate and be a part of this network here, and also knew that it was going to be important to get people to know that people like Gaetan, and there are other people in the movement doing things, but if they're doing them so quietly that very few people know exactly how many people there are that are trying to foster study groups, and not necessarily in the English language. I don't know that there's anyone that is doing as much in a coordinated way that has actually attracted other leaders. There were 28 of us there,
wow,
which is not a huge, huge number. But when you consider that it's in the province of Quebec, when you consider that it's in the French language, when you consider, and I'll let Gaetan go over some of the numbers of the Urantia book that are sold every year, but also just the simple numbers of the Urantia book that there are available in French, and you consider that people actually got together as study group leaders, and particularly for that purpose of wanting to be a better study group leader. And I have to tell you that I did get to participate in my rudimentary way with my intermediate French. I was invited to be there. I wasn't turned away or anything like that. I wouldn't have expected to have been, but I was warmly welcomed and invited to participate as though I had a study group, and I don't have one yet, but may have one soon. Who knows? I was just very, very impressed and knew that Gaetan probably had a lot of wisdom to share on the subject. And that's why Gaetan has been invited here. So welcome, Gaetan.
Thank you, Andre. Thank you. So you want me to share my own view now?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay. So like you said, Andre, well, I was not expecting you that day. The only people that had been invited were leaders of the study group, so it was quite a surprise for me to have seen you there coming in, you know, because we're only expecting a certain amount of people because there were reserved places, and I had literature made specifically for people there. But I guess you had a good use of being there, and it was very important that, I guess, because I'm here today, that you had been there. So I guess God works in sometimes in mysterious ways. My experience with study group goes back to 1987. And like Paula said at the beginning, I had read, or Christeline, I think it was Paula, yeah. I had read the book in 1979, and it took me about 8 years to have it settled down in my mind and in my heart. Not that I did not accept the Rensha book. I had to find ways to accept the change that the book would provoke into me. And I can tell you that at times it was not easy, and I was even mad at sometimes for having read the book, because then I had to do something, you know, personally about it. So it took me all those years before I was ready to attend my first study group. And I remember my first study group, the experience I had with it was as profound as me meeting the book the first time. It completely changed the way I was seeing things, you know. When you read the book, and at that time you could not participate in the study groups unless you had read the whole book beforehand. So I guess it was a little test. So I guess for me it was a little test, you know. So the people going there were only people that had read the book. So there was no, you know, new readers, like they're going through the book for the first time. So they have to prove to the rest that they were really the one, you know, and they have to go through the whole book by themselves. And that was the question I would ask first. Did you read the whole book? I says, yes. And she said, the woman there that I remember was an old lady, was the first study group in Montreal, in fact, at that time. And at that time, there was only maybe two or three other study groups around the area of Montreal. And I attended that group for more than 5 years, till the two people, the couple hosting the group, died. They died of, they were sick and they were old. And then I was left as an orphan, and I felt really, really peculiar at that time, you know, like it was my family had gone away, and I didn't know what to do. And it's just like I didn't want to go into another group yet, you know. I had to go through the process of grieving for that group. It's a funny thing. But anyway, when I took over the association in Quebec in 1999, I didn't know what to do, you know. What do you do as a leader in this movement? Sometimes, you know, you're elected to a position, and you know, nobody gives you any training. You don't know what exactly you're supposed to be looking at, what exactly you're supposed to plan. So I was in the dark. So, like everyone, I guess, I pray, you know, for enlightenment, and I started reading the document that were provided at that time, which was a small booklet, was our charter and bylaws, and the DUT, and, you know, a few other documents. And the only thing that struck me at that time was, we need to create thousands of study groups. Well, I said, maybe I can do that. And then there was this other one, we need to train leaders and teachers. And I said, that's a little bit harder for me. I don't know anything about, you know, leaders or teachers, except that I knew maybe a little bit about leaders, having been in the company for years, that had trained me, had given me courses in leadership. So I knew a bit about that, but not that much, especially not in the spiritual organization, you know. And I was saying to myself, who am I to teach others what to do? You know, I'm an ignorant here. So I went around asking other people, other leaders, you know, what they were doing, but I didn't hear what I wanted to hear. I didn't learn what I was asking for. So I went back to my own self, and I remember one summer, in 1999, a little bit later, late in the summer, I was sitting at home and thinking about this, and I said, I need a plan. If we're going to move ahead with this, and I'm the president of this group, so I need to show them a little bit, you know, what we can do with this organization. So we built a small strategic plan, and the idea was to increase the number of study groups in the province that I'm with. Now, Andre talked to you about numbers. In Quebec, there's 8 million people. So it's about the size, you know, in population as you would find the United States in one city. So at that time, there was only about 3 study groups. And readers, we had a database. Someone had built a small database, and I guess there was no more than. Well, this guy was doing a newsletter, so he had accumulated a lot of names. So I guess there was about 170 names or something, or maybe a little bit more. So I sat down and I thought about a plan to increase the number of study groups. And how would I do that? So I wrote down a letter that I sent to all the leaders that I taught were in the movement at that time in Quebec. And some of those people live quite far away, some in Quebec City. That takes about 3 hours to get to where I live, some further away, some closer, some around Montreal. And I sent a letter, and I sent a letter to about 10 of those people. And after that, afterward, I met them personally and explained to them what I wanted to do, you know, that I wanted to build a plan to increase the number of study groups and to help people have better study groups. And they all agreed, so we met one Saturday, just like a Saturday when Andre came in, you know. So it was a repeat session that we did two, three weeks ago. It's a thing that we did in 1999. And in 1999, it finally, you know, was really not crazy. A coincidence, we were 12 of us. So we sat down at my place for a whole day, and I had prepared a plan, a small plan, with different materials. And in it, I had material about, you know, how to learn how to teach Jesus ways, written by Jeffrey Waddle. And I had other literature put in there about dissemination. And I had I had put in some information about the idea of creating thousands of study groups. And I had set a blank page about goals, how to set goals, how to set objective, and how to have strategies. So during that day, we explored all of those ideas all together, sitting outside. It was a beautiful day. And then at the end of the day, well, we didn't have a plan yet. We had the schematic of a plan, and we needed to meet again. So about, I guess it was nearly a month later, we met again at a different places, though. And there was a little bit more people then. Other people joined in. And from that session there, we really set down goals, and set down objective, and set down some strategies to build, first of all, to increase the number of readers in the province, and then to increase the number of study groups. And from that time, from three study groups at the end of the year, we increased the number, not many, five study groups. But that was a start, and we had the strategies, like to go in book shows and to talk one-on-one and to put little pamphlet here and there, you know, advertising the Rentschel book, and then sometimes putting little ads in newspapers about study groups and the like. And we kept on focusing. And we met again, me and another guy that was one of my friends, Guy Perron. We instilled a program where we would meet hosts of study groups on a regular basis. So we started having meetings with hosts of study groups and to try to see how we could improve what was going within study groups. And, you know, some people participated, some did not, some came in one time, some did many times. But we had about five different meetings like this at different places where we listened to what people had to say about study groups and how we could improve them. Mm-hmm. Now, my idea was to use study group to help study group be a more dynamic place where people could really integrate the teaching of the Rentschel book into their life. Because what I had seen in Quebec is that when I came in, the readers that were there were mostly men. There was barely any women. And I don't know if you know about men. You know, they like to talk and, you know, argue and who's the best or who understands better than the other. And there was a lot of intellectualism within the groups, a lot of arguing. And women were kind of not liking this kind of atmospheres of that feeling. So we needed to change that, to move away from only the intellectual part of the book and have both of them, have the intellectual part, but also have the practical part, which is service-oriented activities towards integrating the teaching of the Rentschel. But that is not easy to do. You know, how do we do this? So we started having mini conferences where we would definitely always talk about study group, but focusing on teams that would help people master the teaching and mature it in a way like to try to make it more practical. So we try to introduce idea that in study groups, when we do study the Rentschel book, we have to focus on the practical way of integrating those teaching. Because if it's only intellectual, what do we gain? You know, how do we impress other people around us if it's only in our head? So we need to change ourselves. So this was my main goal at the beginning, to reform who we were spiritually, to become part of that truth that we read, that we like so much to read about. But that's quite hard. That's quite a task to do. And not everybody agree with that. Some people were scared of just touching this because they believe, you know, what you're trying to do? You're trying to become a religion or something? And I said, no. Rancho book readers are afraid of many things sometimes. You know, they're not because they read the book, they're free from all fears. So anyway, this went on, and we kept the focus on. So just to say that today in Quebec, with a population of 8 million people, we have the benefit of more than 20 study groups. And they're not all very, very active. I mean, some of them have 3-4 people in it. Some maybe have 3. They meet usually every week because I believe that if you want a good study group, you know, it's like in the old days. You go to church, you didn't go to church once a month. You went to church every week at least. Mm-hmm. So to keep a focus on who you are and how you're going to change yourself, you need some practice. You need to be there on a regular basis. You know, if you want to be a bodybuilder, you don't go at the gym once a month. You know, you go nearly 3 times a week sometimes and more. So if you want to change ourselves spiritually to become that living truth, well, we need to do something nearly every day with the Rancho Book. And at least study group should happen, for me, at least every week. So people get in the habit, you know, and they don't lose sight of where they're going.
Of the study groups that I've been to that have met less frequently, it seems like there are always reasons to postpone having it. You know, if you don't have it every week, then, you know, there'll be an excuse why, well, we can't do it this week because so-and-so can't be there.
I agree. And there are some group that only meet once a month, so I don't know how they can accomplish anything once a month. But anyway, they're free to do what they want. And all the time that I was bringing ideas to improve study groups, you know, some people would tell me, you can't do this. You know, study groups are free. You're not supposed to interfere with them. You know, they're independent. I agree with that, you know, and I also believe strongly that study groups should never be politicized. You know, they should be free from any organizations, you know, interfering with them, but organizations should serve them, provide them with material, educational material, program, spiritual program that can be adapted to study group, where people within study group can have very good study groups. And this is how I see organization working, is just to be there for study group, not to try to have them become a member of anything, but just to serve them. Because the idea behind study group is to have people become that living truth and go out again and transform the world by their own example. But anyway, that's my ideology about study groups. So this year, after, you know, thinking about study groups, and I said we need to go back to, you know, improving again, you know, because you cannot do something one time and believe it's done forever. So we always need to go back to the basic thing. So I decided to, this year, because I'm also the president of my local association, so I keep focusing on study group all the time because this is where I believe we can train leaders and teachers, and we can also help people integrate that teaching. So I decided to program a new meeting with OSA study group because we have more study groups now. So when Roundry came into that meeting, this was in fact our second meeting. We had a previous one where I announced in the spring that we would have a meeting in the summers to look at how we could improve study groups and set goals. So this was our second meeting, and I was really surprised that we got so many people. Some people came from 4.5 hours away by car, and, you know, that's quite a lot. They had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to attend that meeting at 10. And we had people from Quebec City because we have a huge province where people are very separated. So we're trying to establish study group in about every major city that we have. And so I have prepared something. You know, you don't have a meeting without having stuff prepared beforehand. And my experience with previous meetings like so helped me put together some good program. But I did not do this all alone. I have the people within my own organization, to the board member of my own organization, to help out in this. So we had before a program where we had 3 conference, mini conference a year. We decided to let go of that for now and focus more on study groups. So the idea was to use study groups to have strategy within study groups that would instill some dynamic into the study group. So how we were going to do that? Well, we know that doing presentation would be one way. So we have some people that are able to do good, you know, presentation, PowerPoint or the like. So we said, what if in study groups we would have a program where people within that study group, all together as a team, they would work on building a presentation. And after having made it good, you know, like maybe they can work at it for 2-3 months, you know, studying a real subject, you know, really studying it and deepening their understanding of it, of the subject. Then they make a presentation. And once that presentation is well done, then having one or two of those people go in other study groups and make that presentation to their study groups. And they say, wow, that's a good idea. And we had already people that had done presentation in conference here and there. So what we did for 3 study groups, we had some of those people go in those study groups and do mini presentation for an hour. And then people would then, for the next hour, ask questions or, you know, and deepen the subject that was presented to them. And people really liked this idea because then they could invite friends within the study group because the subject chosen could be, you know, a general subject having to do with anything, prayer, angels, life after death, or whatever. And then when we did have mini conference, we only attracted people around the area. But by having them in study groups all over the place, then we can attract a lot more people because people in study group have friend, family that might be interested in, you know, a small presentation. It's not intimidating. It's family-wise. So people really like this idea. But not only do we want to make presentation like this in study group, I have put together a lot of material that I gave to those people, so I was well prepared. So some of the material had to do with the program to learn how to teach the Jesus way. And we have this woman, Carolyn Prentice, who's a teacher, that put together a program. It's a 60, I think the paper itself is 65 pages or something. So I had it print all together with a nice picture of Jesus teaching around him. And it's a program that could be introduced in study group where people together can learn how to teach, but very, very easily. It's a, you know, it's something that anyone can do. And I also put in that literature all kinds of other literature having to do with teaching and with leaderships and also with dissemination. So I have this paper written many years ago, but Vern Ridley, about 111 ways to disseminate the teaching of Durantula. So in fact, we want the study group not only to be a place where they can integrate the teaching, but also a place where people can learn how to share those teachings. You know, we have to increase the number of readers and not always rely on publicity, on bookshops, on, you know, advertising in newspapers and the like. The real work has to be done by us. And we have to stop always looking for an easy way out, you know. We have to be there, you know. We're the sowers, you know, and the sowers is the one in the field and planting those seeds. And if everyone in a study group, if you imagine, you know, imagine, like I said, in Quebec, where we have 20 study groups. Let's say there's, in general, about an average of 8 people within a study group, or 5. How many of those 5 people could influence other people? Let's say they influence 10 people around them. And now those other 10 people, they can influence others around. And then if all those 10 people, those 5 people, learn ways to share those teaching and to bring in new readers, and then they do it consistently because they learn how to do it and they practice, then, you know, we don't need to put as much time in advertising and money. And not only that, I believe it is more effective. Most of us have got the book through a friend, through someone else, by word of mouth. Why would we always look for a different way? Well, internet is a good way, but I believe the one-on-one thing is the more powerful way. So this is why we're trying to introduce. So our goal within study groups is not only to increase the number of study groups, is to increase the number of readers in the long run. By this, we will increase the number of study groups in the long run. But not only doing that, but also provide a place where people can really integrate, learn how to integrate those teachings. Now, we have to work on the practical side of those teachings. So this is why I provided them with a program. And then we're working to try to build other programs where people can share how they really integrate those teachings. So there's two parts of this, the intellectual part of learning the books and the more service-oriented part where people need to go back to service, just like Jesus did with his apostle. He said, he taught them, he says, go back out and, you know, do what I show you to do. So we need to have people be in service. And if they are in service and practicing what they've learned, then they integrate those teachings. And then by integrating them, they help this world to become a better place. And so now, after our day that Renee talked about, where we had all this literature, we didn't accomplish everything. We still need to have another meeting probably in October, where definitely there we'll sit down and write down those objectives and write down the strategy. Because I know what the goals are. But the people, they need to work at this together. I cannot fix objective for them. I cannot make them accept strategy that I think would be good. It has to be a teamwork. So people, when doing this, they become better at doing it with others later. The only thing I can do is lead them in the way that they can learn, and then again, they can teach others how to do it. If I do everything alone, they'll never learn anything. But they need to be part of the process. And for me, this is what it's about, training leaders. Now, teachers, that can be done within the study groups. And I think hosts of study groups are the real leader of this movement. This is where we need to focus. And so in that same kind of thought, we're talking like, someone talked about the leadership symposium or training session we've had in UAI for last years. Well, we're looking ahead, maybe next year, we're not sure yet, but to have a symposium, but only dedicated to a host of study groups. And definitely to have a place where a host of study group can come in, share their own experience, their own belief, their own problem, you know, because there's all kinds of problems you meet in study group. But then to focus together on how we can get more readers, how we can integrate the teaching, how we can increase the number of study groups, then we can really accomplish something. And I believe that by having a group, you know, of people together, joined together by doing this, we'll really move ahead. Now, as you know, the three main organizations have joined hands to create what we call the study group directory. In the beginning, the idea behind the directory was also to create a space where study group hosts could have a chat room, you know, where they could exchange ideas between themselves. So it's still there. It's still a possibility so that we can explore, because the program used to build that directory could allow this. And we also need to work very, very hard on producing good material, educational material, and look at it in such a way that it's like a program that could be very easily introduced within study group. And we could provide a website where those programs could be downloaded, you know, whether they are presentations, short films, but material focus on practicality. We need to keep that in mind, practicality. It needs to be practical, not just something that you learn just stays in your mind. So study group, you know, need to be some place where people come in, but at least they get something out of it, not just knowing things, but knowing how to apply them in their life and change their life. So this is my commitment, but there's more to it. But I think I've said enough for now. Thank you.
Wonderful, okay. Gitan.
Well, and that, you know, sums up a very methodical way to go and develop study groups and develop effective study group leaders and really make study groups more enjoyable places. And I'm sure we've always, and we can all relate some experiences we've had. I'll share one, just touching on one of the things you brought up, Gaetan, and that was that sometimes study groups haven't been exactly friendly to female attendees. And I know that my dear friend Joanne and cohort who sits side by side with me, she did a study group for 10 years, and it was 10 men and her. And it was a very intellectual group. I attended that group for a long time. I didn't leave because I felt in over my head, but I moved and I had to go to a different group, and sometimes that's the factor. But I do remember taking my sister to that group, and my sister was a brand new reader. She'd read the whole Urantia book, but she'd never been to study group, and I was so thrilled to take her to that group. She was completely overwhelmed. And later she told me, honey, I'll never go back to a study group again. Those people are out of my league. I didn't understand a word that anybody was saying. And I felt so uncomfortable there. And it broke my heart because I wanted to share that with her. And, I realized that a lot of times you bring in, Mo Siegel and I have had this experience. We started the Jesus Study Group in 1990 because we would work, as Gaetan said, very, very hard to get new readers to come to group. And about halfway through, they'd go glassy-eyed and we'd never see them again. And we noticed it. I mean, it happened over and over and over again. And we started the Jesus Study Group just so new readers would have a place to jump in, because we reasoned that even if they came in the middle of the Jesus papers, they'd still be able to get up to speed with the group, and they'd still be able to know what was going on. Whereas if they came in the middle of energy, mind, and matter, they'd go glassy-eyed and we'd never see them again. And I know that a lot of study groups have dealt with this problem of new readers because, let's face it, you know, you can jump into some papers that are so deep and conversation that is so deep, you really do get lost and you really don't have a clue what's being said, especially not as a new reader. And especially if you haven't started the book with a group, started from paper one and gone all the way through, that's very effective for new readers. But how often does that happen, that they get to start from the beginning and go all the way through? Usually they jump in at some point along the way. And that was Mo and my way of dealing with this new reader problem, and how, you know, in the over intellectual study group issue. That and I know that I've heard other people have dealt, and the beautiful thing about a network, which Crystalline is proposing, is that study group leaders can get together and share ideas and share experiences that are vital and relevant to what they're dealing with. And I'll give you an example. Berkeley Elliott, who had study group in her house for years and years and years and years, always called it a class. It was Urantia class. And if a new reader came to group, they would stop studying whatever it was they were studying, and the whole group would focus on that new reader, and they would give the opportunity for the new reader to just ask questions for the entire time and say, you know, completely acclimate them to the group. So, you know, those are just some things I wanted to throw out about, you know, study group experience and how we might manage new readers. And make them feel welcome and help them, adapt to the study group and the level of conversation that's going on there.
I think that's so important, Paula. I know that for years, I had studied the book on my own for a year and a half, and intellectually I thought, you know, I was grasping things relatively well. And nobody has a perfect understanding of the book or anything like that. But I thought I was grasping it pretty well, and that's fine. The one thing, you know, I did not grasp as a very young reader of the book was that how much some of these readers wanted to be related to me, wanted to be my fellow. How many of them actually loved me and cared about me. I came into the teachings of the Urantia book with a colossal inferiority complex. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. My experience was such that I didn't know who I fit with. And when I first found... When I first met Urantia book readers in Vancouver, I met two people who shall remain nameless, They were both wonderful people and longtime readers and tremendous. But in sort of the emotional shape that I was in as a 19-year-old at that point, meeting my first Urantia book readers, I met somebody who couldn't have possibly looked anything like what I felt like inside. Someone with a booming radio voice and who spoke very, very, very arrogantly. At least that's how it felt to me at that time. I later got to know this reader better and understood, just how loving he was. My point is that we don't know how people are arriving in our movement. This wonderful revelation of ours is attracting absolutely everyone from any walk of life if they have a hunger for truth.
Mm-hmm.
If they can wade through, if they can get past the foreword, if they can get to the life and teachings of Jesus, if they can take interest in the scientific pronouncements of the revelation, if they can be interested in the historical presentations or the cosmology of the local universe and the super universe, whatever it is that attracts someone to the Urantia book, whatever they have fallen in love with, they ought to feel welcome into this movement. They ought to feel like they belong, because sooner or later, all of the revelation will move them in their heart and in their mind, and they will feel a part of it. As I feel comfortable in any group of Urantia book readers. I realize every group of Urantia book readers are my people. I start at a very high foundation with all Urantia book readers. Not high in the highfalutin sense, not high in the sense of being better or chosen or anything like that. But we have a common understanding, those of us that have been with the revelation for even a little while and have fallen in love with it and understand its fundamental truth of preaching the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man and sisterhood of man and woman, you know, all of that. That is a fundamental truth that when you start on that foundation, you develop friendships that for me always feel like no matter how many years go by before I meet someone, as I reunite with someone, it's as though no time has passed at all, even years later.
Indeed. That's true.
Well, you know, and I think, and I don't know, Gaetan, if you have dealt, you know, with some of these issues that come up in study group. I'm sure you have, but, you know, I do think, I have to agree with you, Andre, that it is so important to take time with a newcomer in a group, because that person is obviously the outsider. That person is obviously the one that feels uncomfortable. And, you know, it's like when you're new in the neighborhood. If you move into a neighborhood, you don't go from door to door saying, "Hi, I'm new in the neighborhood. I thought you might like to get to know me." I mean, it's up to the other neighbors to come and say to the newcomer, "Hi, I noticed you just moved in. Here's a loaf of bread," and, you know, or whatever. And to extend a hand of friendship and kindness and love to that newcomer to make them feel welcome in the group. And my first group experience was I didn't feel welcome there. I felt like a complete outsider. I tried for 6 weeks, and I never did feel welcome. And the thing that kind of got me was the host and hostess never said, "Oh, hi, Paula, we're so glad you came."
Mm-hmm.
And just that one simple little thing would have made all the difference to me. Just one, and the people, I'm in your home, tell me you're glad I came.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't feel like I'm intruding on something that's well established and, you know, I'm not welcome here. And I was just a kid. I was 22. I was pregnant with my son Nathan, and it mattered to me. So little things, very little things to make people feel like you're glad they came, to stop any time, to make it clear, to set ground rules. You know, anybody can ask a question at any time, that kind of thing, I think is really helpful. We have a caller who's been on for about 15 minutes, and I'd like to put him on. I think it might be Andrea. I'm not sure.
Andrea.
Hey, it is you.
How are you? Let me see if I got that on speaker. Hang on real quick.
Okay.
Oh, no. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
we hear you just fine, Andrea.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. I've really been enjoying this. And first of all, I want to thank Gaetan for all the tremendous ideas that he's put out here this morning. I particularly like the idea of having a website where we can share the resources that you've developed, because I think that's so needed. You know, people have just been sort of getting by in study groups, and they haven't had a lot of direction and assistance. So I think if we start moving in that direction, that would be really good. My own personal history with study groups, I was 19 when I found the book, and if it hadn't been for actually going to, I was with Joanne, I don't know if it was at her house, part of the time it was at her house down in Denver, and I would drive from Fort Collins to Denver to the study group. And without that, there would be no way I could have gotten into this book, because I didn't have the vocabulary, I didn't feel like I had the intelligence whatsoever to get into it. But because of study group, through years and years and years of going to them, I feel like I've got a pretty good grasp of it. And now I feel like I can attend some of the online study groups, like the one that Chris Halverson gives with the Symmetry of Soul, and that are quite advanced, but, you know, you can get into it now. I have been working myself developing, you know, trying to develop study groups and to develop the people that go to the study groups. So, for example, in San Diego back in May, we did a little three-day mini conference, because a lot of people can't afford to go to the big conferences, or you know, it's just too far or whatever. So I had the idea of, you can go into a city where there are already a lot of readers, and you can gather those readers together so that they can have fellowship and talk about the study groups, talk about maybe starting new study groups, just reunite with each other and reignite friendships. I think that that's really important. And then what I like to do, too, is give an introduction to the book to people who maybe have never heard about the book before. So I'll advertise on meetup.com or on Craigslist and bring out new readers. And then these new people have the opportunity to meet the existing readers, and then they feel comfortable going into their home because they've met them personally. So it's not like, you know, you're going into somebody's home you don't know. I think that's one of the problems with growing a study group is, unless it's word of mouth, it's hard to bring somebody who's just found out about the book into somebody's home. They don't feel comfortable going there. So also, I've been here in Utah. I was here for the month of June, and now I'm back again, and so I've been attending the study group here. And there is one gal who's been attending the group for 8 months, and another gal that was just, it was her very, very first time of attending the study group, and she came last Tuesday night. And they don't have the idea in their heads, and I'm not faulting them, I'm just saying that they just didn't have it in their heads that they really had to nurture and handhold these new people. At one point I said, well, how about if I give a little synopsis of the book? And so I really gave a short, less than 5-minute overview of the book, and the gal who had been there, had been attending for 8 months, just was thrilled. She says, oh, my gosh, I understand this book so much better now. I'm so glad I came tonight. And, you know, it's really important that you do tune into these new people and try and see things from their perspective, because, you know, people need to get a glimpse of what the book is about in order to put what the reading is into context. So I agree with Paula that it would be really important when you have a new reader to just put all of your attention on them, or better yet, to start a group that's specifically intended for new readers.
Mm-hmm.
And I also agree with Gaetan with having it weekly, you know, because I think that that's, you almost need to have it that frequently in order for people to really be involved and stay involved. And you can't keep moving the venue. You have to you know, you have to be real steady with it. I started a group in my hometown, but I've been traveling so much I haven't been able to continue it. And they were all new readers, so there wasn't anybody to pick up the ball. So I feel a little bit bad about that because I had a group
that's
going.
That's really sad.
I know, but I'm still out doing work, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well,
I wanted
to ask you a question, too. When you were talking about sort of the practical application, I would love it if you could get into a little bit more detail about what you mean by that or how that developed.
How developed?
I'm asking Gaetan.
Oh, okay.
You know, earlier in the show, he talked about trying to get more of a practical application of the teachings as part of their, you know, he was saying it was, had been very intellectual when it was all men, and that he wanted to make it more accessible to more people and to, you know, get a more practical application of the teachings. And I just wondered if you would be willing to talk a little bit more about that specifically.
Yeah, well, I can do that. When I did start that, we did like kind of a, with our feet, you know, plodding flowers. So, more to do.
You're starting to clip, Gaetan. Are you on a cordless? Or are you away from your base a little bit?
Oh, I'm on Skype. Maybe just
you're on Skype? Okay.
Yeah, if you get closer to your mic, that might help.
I'm going to be closer.
So, yeah, much better.
Okay.
When we did start that a few years ago, we started that with a mini conference, a workshop conference, where we would ask people to share how the teaching related to their own life. So they had to share life experience. This is how we first started this. It was not first in a study group. My idea was to introduce those concepts within study groups, but we worked at them through a workshop. And so people start sharing their own life experience, but we always have to focus them on how does it relate to what you've learned in the Rinchen book, because sometimes people tend to stray away if you don't focus them in the right direction. So it took us a little bit of a time to adapt to this new way of doing things. But after we did, we learned a few things from there, you know, about people sharing their own life experience of how they relate those experiences to what they've learned in the Rinchen book. And we needed to focus on that direction. So when I started bringing that up in my study groups, I had to keep that in mind myself. So we need to keep a focus somewhere. And my focus was always to try to help people grow spiritually. The only thing we can do that is to integrate those teaching and go back and put them in use. So I kept that in focus. I didn't tell everybody this is what I was trying to do. But in my mind, this is what I was trying to do as a host. So, but any time we would do something within the study groups, any time I would change how the study group would operate, I would explain to the participant what I wanted to do, and I needed a consensus. Never would I apply a new way of doing things without having the whole group accept the change of routine, you know, of what was going on. So they needed to understand exactly what we're doing. And once they all agree, then we could go in. And never did we go in unless everyone agreed. So by focusing on the practicality, so every time I read the book, and we read the book together, and we read sequentially because we have many new readers, in my mind was clear that what then I would ask people question, how does this relate to you? What do you get out of this? How does it change you, or how does it help you change how you live? Sometimes the subject didn't agree with this kind of proposal. Like if you read about physics or the stars or things like that, that's quite different. But there are many parts of the book where they, like the life of Jesus, or like when they talk about the gesture, when they talk about religion, when they talk about God, there are good parts in the book where this can be applied very easily. So one exercise I did 1 week, I can remember that. I have two study groups, in fact. I have one at home with my wife and friends. I have one at my sister's place. And I had my mother there also when she was alive, and I had many friends there coming in. And so at my sister's place study group, her husband is a manager, was a manager into a workshop, a shop there where they build covers. So I asked them, I said, okay, this week we're going to do a little exercise. And I remember we were reading papers in the Jesus Life about love, about service. So I said, this week, let's focus on how we can improve, how we can service others. And when we approach someone, let's think about God and the love he's given us, and let's see how we can share that love, how we can serve those other people with love. And that was an exercise just to focus people on it, of what we read. And next week when we come together, we share our own experiment, you know, how we realize what we had set forth. And it was so amazing, you know, what people start sharing about, you know, just because they had focus on specific things, you know, that we talked about. And my brother-in-law, you know, was the one that was so, you know, touched by this. He said, I could not believe, you know, that just by focusing on, you know, this guy that usually I go, you know, I give him hell all the time. But then he said, before I start talking, I said, oh, let's remember, you know, I have to look at this guy with love. So how am I going to talk to him, you know, because he did something I didn't like. And he says it changed completely his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings him in some ways. And he learned from it. And, you know, my brother-in-law there, he's not a reader. He's not intellectual at all. He doesn't read on his own. And when we start reading the book, because, you know, he's the husband of my sister, and he sat down with us, he could not even read because he's a dyslexic person. But I had him read slowly. And today, he told his brother, when one of his brother asked him, when did you learn to read so well? Well, he says, we have this group. And he says, I love to read in this group. So he gained that from that. But he gained more. And in this family where my sister is, because we have the study group there, their kids, you know, they were going through adolescence. And they were having problems. One of the young My young nephew there was having problem with friends and drugs and the like. And, you know, but by having a regular study group at their place, and he came to sat down beside in the living room and just listened to us, never said anything. And now for the last year, for the last half hour of the group, he sits with us and he listens. And sometimes he asks questions. Because we're trying to make this practical. We talk about experience, how we see life in comparison to what the teaching tells us. So I believe that by focusing, there's many ways we can, you know, mix. But I believe that if in the host mind,
we're fine. That's just background. Go ahead, Gaetan.
Mm-hmm. Let's mute that other line.
If the host is focusing on study, on making group practical, they can find many ways of doing this, you know. We have ways that at the beginning, ask people, you know, did they go through experience? You know,
daughter will be there Sunday after.
You're fading out again, Gaetan.
Sorry.
It may not be you. It may be interference.
Yeah, it may be.
As leaders and share with other hosts is the experience we have, but by focusing on this factor, isn't it?
Oh, I'm having a hard time hearing you, Gaetan.
Yeah, we're losing you completely, Gaetan.
Yeah, well, I'll call on my phone. Maybe it's the...
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. We'll grab it when you come back right away. And I'd like to put on a caller that's been holding for quite a while from area code 562. Area code 562, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? Area code 562? Oh, they must have just dropped off. I think this might be Buck. Buck, is this you?
Can you hear me? Yes, this is Buck.
Yeah. Hi, Buck.
Hi, Buck.
Good morning,
hi,
Buck.
Hi, Andrea. Hi,
that's
Kristen.
Buck Weimer.
Yeah.
This is Buck Weimer, and we have Andrea. Are you still with us?
Andrea is here.
And Andrea?
Nice to have you on.
Good to hear you all.
Yes, good to hear you too.
Hey, Buck.
I've been listening. Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate that.
Very happy to do so.
While Gaetan has taken a break because we were having some technical problems, I'm hoping you can... Oh, you're back?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
hi.
I called back in on a landline. I just put
Perfect.
It
Perfect.
Well, then let's let Gaetan finish what he was saying before we get into what you have to tell us, Buck, if that's okay.
Sure. Sure, it's fine. It's great.
Okay, what I was saying is that we need to have program, definite program, where people can, you know, take different papers of the book, and that might not apply for every papers, but there are definitive some papers that could very well do for this kind of practice of having program that maybe at the end of the lecture, you know, when we read all together, we can spend some time, the last half hour, discussing what we've read and how we can apply this in our life. And another thing that I do in the study group, when, you know, sometimes people tend to, you know, start talking about, oh, this and that, and it doesn't really relate to their to the actual life they're living or to actual problem in their life. So I'm always, you know, nudging them gently to go back to, well, how does that relate to you now? How does that relate to real life experience? You know, and supposition, because a lot of people like to, you know, I don't know, fantasize or have all kinds of supposition and go off in a tangent. So we try to limit that, you know. We try to always bring it back to how does it apply in our life. And for the art part of the book, now a little bit earlier you were talking about the art part there, like the beginning of the book and all this. And I remember my group that we're going through that place where they talk about, you know, the Trinity when it started and all this, you know, the beginning. And for the young reader, this was very, very confusing, you know. And even if I could explain it well, you know, they still had blank area. They could not really well grasp what was said there. So we had this couple come in that did those kind of presentation on some of the art part of the book, the beginning of the universe and all this. And they have given us, within our study group, a presentation that lasted more than an hour. And I could not believe the comments of the people within the group, you know, wow, I understand now. I get it, you know, because they could have seen a picture of something, you know, a concept. And just by grasping that concept, they finally made it, you know, they finally could grasp the whole thing or part of the whole thing. But at least it made it interesting for them. So, you know, this is a practical way to have study group for me, is to have people, you know, doing presentation of things that are, for some, very difficult to understand. But for them, they've been studying it for years. So this is the intellectual part. You know, there are some people there that they can do this. And they can go back to the study group and do those little presentations that will enhance the activity within the study group. And then it creates a dynamic study group because people say, wow, that is fun, you know. Then, you know, we have something different. We have whether a short film or we have a presentation. We have a different presenter, you know. It's somebody new that comes in and shares his own experience. And these are ways that we can use and many others we can think about. But I think the main idea behind this is that the host, if he has the right focus, he will find the ways to make the study group a good place and a very dynamic place to be. And as you said, Paula, before about welcoming people, I'm privileged because my wife is a reader also, so it's not maybe the fact of every family out there, you know, that people have study groups and there's only the man that reads and his wife doesn't read or things like that. So, but at my home, my wife is as much as active as I am. And when people come in our house, and let's say there's a new reader that calls in, we ask him to come in at least half an hour ahead of time, and sometimes more. And if they come from afar, we ask them to stay with us. We provide them with a lunch, you know, for supper. And we have time to talk with them and to get acquainted together and, you know, befriend them before the group starts. And when the group starts, we always ask everyone to introduce themselves to that new person so they know who the persons are there. And then we ask that person to, you know, make a small introduction, or if not, I will do that, or my wife will.
So the contact there is always to welcome those people. And every time we have a study groups, when people come in to the group, my wife and I are always at the door, you know, welcoming those people. You know, even if they're late, I'll get up and I'll go to the door and I'll hug them and welcome them to the group. And if they don't come for a certain time, we always phone them asking them, you know, if something is wrong, you know, or, they, you know, sometimes something might happen in their own family. So we always take, you know, news about what's going on to make sure that, you know, they're okay, you know, so they know we're there for them. And to have a consistent group, you know, regular group, that's very important also. So when my wife and I started that group, you know, we said, well, this is for a long, long time. And I don't see where or when should it stop, you know. So as long as I'll live there, I'll have that group, you know. So host of study group, when young hosts, when they start a group, they need to make a commitment. And this is also important. A commitment is something for the long time. It's not something you try out for 1 or 2 weeks or a month like I've seen. So people need to be sitting there. There might be time where there's no one showing up, but they need to be there, make themselves available, and people will come in. Another thing that I tell people of OSA study group, when you do have a study group, don't forget you're not alone. There are angels watching over you, and they want to know if you're serious about this. And if you are serious, committed, don't worry, you'll get people. But first they want to make sure you're the right person, because they're not going to send someone they've been working with for years and having you, you know, just throw away what they did. So by having, you know, this thought that, not always focusing on this, but by knowing that you're not alone, you know, it's a spiritual group. So you're getting spiritual help. You're getting all the benefit of it in your home. So this is important.
Yes, it is.
No,
Gaetan, I want to just underscore the point you made about commitment.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot but believe that every reader has at one time or another, if they have the opportunity to get to a study group, you know, on a weekly basis. And let's be clear as an aside that there are plenty of people that are quite remote, with, you know, 3 or 4 hours from their nearest study group. I know one regular listener on this program who is in that situation. I'm sure there are many, many. And that's one of the values of this program. But I know that for myself, it relates very closely to my own experience as, you know, a young reader in my 20s. You know, I'd gotten to Denver. We had plenty of study groups, or at least we had a few study groups that could be attended. And I had the opportunity to go to Joanne, at that time Joanne and Jim Brummett's, now Joanne Weedman's, you know, study group. And it was a wonderful study group. It was a weekly study group. And I wasn't always able to make it every week. And boy, did I feel that tap on the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all readers at some point get that tap on the shoulder that says, when are you gonna make a commitment to do this regularly? When is this going to be important enough that you're going to show up every week unless you really, really can't, unless really something more important doesn't get in the way? And I know that number one, it made a very big difference to me, first of all, when I made that commitment. I said, this is now a priority for me. This is not third or fourth or fifth priority, and if something else comes along, I'm not getting to study group. This is what I'm doing on Wednesday nights. I'm coming to study group unless, you know, something that is, you know, an important occasion or something that I just can't miss, you know, happens to get in the way. But, you know, 4 times out of 5 in the month or more, I am getting to study group. And that made such a difference in my own experience in study. Secondly, it makes a difference to the study group. And I'm not making an overblown assumption about my own participation in a study group or something else, but when other readers understand that they are going to come to a study group that they know is a going concern,
And in English, I use the little phrase, a committed core of three or four is all you need, you know, to keep a study group solid. If you've got three or four people, then you know that regardless of what's going to come up, there's always going to be at least two or three people that are at that study group that others are going to know that there's something solid there that they can show up to.
Andre, I want to give Buck a chance, too, to jump in here because he has such a vast experience with study groups and
absolutely.
And has been traveling
all over
the...
Absolutely. I've been to
Buck's study group. Yeah, me too.
Me too.
But I want to share, I just want to jump in on a point that you just made that I think is so important. I got a call from my friend Luann Harney. You guys all know Luann. She was moving up to Loveland, and she said, you know, Paula, if you know of any study groups up there, let me know. And I said, well, I don't, you know, right now, but I'll keep an ear out for you. So then it wasn't long after that Jill Caveney called me, and she said, you know, Paula, I live up here in Loveland. And me and Jim have been meeting for 3 years, just the two of us. Just the two of us. We meet every week faithfully, and we've done so for 3 years. Now, if you know of anybody else who would like to, come and join us, boy, we sure would appreciate it. So I called Luann back up, and I said, Luann, you know, Jill and Jim meet up there in Loveland, and they sure would love it if you'd go over and study with them. She said, well, great. She took all the details down. So Luann started studying, and now it was a group of three. Within a year, there were 12. Now, I don't know, you know, the Your Answer book says, it has a great quote about, you know, two people versus three constitutes a social problem. But it's almost like when there were three of them, it created a sufficient gravity to draw, and that group in Fort Collins and Loveland has been 12 consistently ever since. So I think that's such a good point. And Buck, you know, I know you've been going to, gosh, my first book was put in my hands because you guys started a study group in a correctional facility.
Yeah, you know, we'll always be eternally attached for that and have a relationship begin there. But just to train a little bit on your idea there, that three, your ancient book is very clear about three constituting a group. A minimum group is three. So two is a relationship, and that's wonderful, but three is a minimum group. So whenever you have three, then you have the beginning of the dynamics of a group. You know, which is something I think is really important for us readers to be aware of, is the dynamics of a group. You know, we in our study group, we've been meeting now, you know, the core readers for maybe, you know, 20 years. And so we have a collective consciousness that has grown tremendously over the years. We can discuss things now that, you know, even 5 years ago we were all sort of fumbling and mumbling around about. One of the reasons I'm saying that is because I know part of the discussion this morning was about introducing new people to the group or to the book. And it really looms as a very difficult issue any way you slice and dice it, because I think of that group consciousness. What we've done down here in Pueblo, or at least with our study group, we have three study groups down here now, and what our group does is we've committed to one meeting a month at the public library for an introduction for new readers.
So
number one, you know, they're not intimidating coming into somebody's house or home. And number two, you know, they can feel comfortable leaving anytime they want to. For us, it creates a, you know, a little bit of a more relaxed atmosphere for newcomers. And sometimes no new newcomers will come, and that's fine. So we'll just have our regular meeting. But we always advertise it, you know, in the paper, and those who come will, you know. So anyway, that's one thing we've done with newcomers. It's a difficult thing, I think. You have the whole group dynamic. Now, there's a reason, I'm sure we all know, and don't know exactly what that reason is, but there's a reason why we're sort of commissioned to do study groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and part of my thinking on that is because within the dynamics of a study group, we actually get to practice the fatherhood
yes.
of God and the brotherhood of man.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, we're two-part beings. You know, we're individuals. That's the fatherhood of God. And we're a group. That's the brotherhood of man.
Mm.
So, you know, we constantly have to make that choice during the group discussion. Do I shut up
mm-hmm.
and listen?
Right.
Or do I contribute, you know, and be, you know, and be part of the group consciousness? So I think it's almost like a beginner's experience at the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. And then I think, as Gaetan mentioned earlier, you know, we then expand that into our social, you know, sort of group that we're involved in, and then we outreach that as far as we want to go.
Right.
So I think the group dynamics is really, really powerful, as we all know, but there's a reason for it. And again, I think it's because, you know, we get a chance to practice what our master taught us. You know, it's the part and the whole, the individual and the group, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. So anyway, I don't want to do.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's fellowship experience, is it? I mean, Buck, you've been doing this for years and years and years, and Gaetan as well, and any of us who've been in study groups for a long period of time. There's no way that you don't come up with, you know, some personalities that you wonder, so what was that teaching again? Okay, the fatherhood of God and the brother. Okay, everyone is my brother and sister. Okay.
So here's an opportunity.
And at times you take a deep breath and you say, okay, well, Father, you're giving me a challenge to realize this wonderful truth.
Yeah, and so here's a person I may never normally interact with socially.
Wow.
And, you know, wouldn't run into them or have cause to be with them, but here I am in a group with them, and you know, I've got to practice that tolerance, understanding leads to friendship, and friendship leads to love. You know, and you practice that dynamic, and it works. I mean, it really does. I mean, it works for me anyway. You know, so
isn't it amazing too how when you're in a study group setting, and I just love this setting. I love being in a person's home, but it also works. We know with Chris Halverson's group in a church, it also works in a library. Wherever you can create a bit of an intimate environment, people are sitting together in a circle. Everybody can see everybody else's faces. You're reading this profoundly beautiful material together. The spirit moves on that. I mean, it's so magical. And week after week, you get to know these folks. I mean, you really get to know them. And you fall in love with them. You absolutely fall in love with them. And, you know, you can honestly say, I know you and I love you. And it's because you've sat in this circle, in this intimate circle, and you've studied these beautiful teachings together, and you've shared from your heart, you've shared your experiences, you know, like Gaetan pointed out, this is how, you know, I share this teaching, this is what works for me, you know, I went out to this week and tried to focus on loving every person or whatever. You know, whatever you share in that group becomes very bonded, and you do fall in love with each other, and then the challenge then is when a newcomer comes, it changes the dynamic a bit, and you just kind of have to adapt to that different dynamic. And everybody that's a newcomer to a group is going to change the dynamic. And I just wanted to throw out there, you know, what do you do? And I know every study group has had this problem when a troublesome personality shows up, somebody who disrupts the group on a regular basis. What do you do? What technique has worked for you guys?
Well, for myself, we've had some of those, but I guess it all depends on the host himself and I guess what type of personality there is involved in the group. But I think it's the host that needs to before that person is introduced to the group, they know exactly the rules of the group. There need to be some basic rules to how this group is handling itself. So by explaining exactly how the group works to that new person, we most of the time will prevent this. But we've had in the past people coming in for different reasons to study group. We had Jehovah Witness coming in. I guess they wanted to recruit people. We've had other people coming in. We didn't know what were their agenda, but they definitely had a different agenda. So I took those person aside and explained to them what was the goal of the group, their meeting. So I guess when they knew the, you know, the, not that I felt them unwelcome, just that I was, you know, not strict, but I mean, they knew that the group was for this. They felt, well, I guess I won't be able to do what I'm wanting to do in that group. But there might be other kind of behavior that happened, and I've heard a few there, people really disruptive in the group, you know, getting into argument, and I guess the host needs to address that issue right away, you know, not let that person take over the whole group so as to shy away those person there yeah. that will. So it's the part of the host, and this is why we need training. We need to get those hosts together and go through those process, you know, group dynamic, like Buck was saying there. There are all kinds of literature about group dynamic, but there is definitely need to be a training, you know, where we can all sit down with hosts and explore those issues that comes up, and have people with the basic experience of having gone through those same issues explain how they did really manage those hard to come by issues. So, you know, those issues that really upset the group. But there are all those ways. But the problem is sometimes when we do have also study groups starting a group, that we're not really training the art of hosting a study group. You know, they're just probably new readers. I even have new readers wanting to start study group. And I say, whoa, wait a second. Have you gone through a study group yet? No. How can you start a study group if you have not yet gone to a study group? So we need to help those people that want to start a group. And within the study groups, you know, one of our objective should be to train leaders, to train other people to have study groups. Because I believe that I've seen so many groups that are so comfortable. You know, they've been meeting for years, the same people over and over again, old readers. I know one of the groups here in Quebec. And they're so comfortable, you know, they don't want to get out of that comfortability. You know, they want to stay in that. And I think as a spiritual explorer, we need to push the boundaries of our comfort. We need to go into an area that, you know, provokes us, you know, say, okay, you know, I'm too comfortable. What is it I should be doing now? So the focus on why we do have study group is very important. We just don't have study group just for the sake of study group or just for the sake of having a bunch of friends together. We're trying to accomplish something. And in the foreword of the book, the Revelator, on the second paragraph, they say, to expand conscious consciousness and deepen spiritual perception. How are we going to do this, you know? And if we want to make groups practical, well, we need to go back to those, like you said, Paula, before. Beckerle Elliott said it was like a small class. Well, what do we do at school? We learn things, and then we have work to do after that. So, you know, we have to rethink study group, you know, get out of the way of we are doing things and start thinking about other ways. And ways that might not be as comfortable at the beginning, because we'll push the way we're doing things. We'll get out of that comfort zone, and we'll try to bring in new program, you know, that will have people working diligently at improving themselves. You know, if we do have people going in study group, like I've seen, I've seen people going in study group, and it seems like it only works for them at the intellectual level. And I look at them, you know, not that I want to judge them, but, you know, I look at how they live their life. And I've seen people that I don't see an improvement. They're the same as they were. They're acting, they're talking the same way as they were 10 or 15 years ago. And, you know, this should not happen. They should be involved in more service. So we should encourage people within study group to go into service area. Like Jesus said to his apostle, go minister to the sick and the needy. So it doesn't mean that we need to work in an hospital, but at least we should have at least one activity of service where it helps us, you know, explore how we can integrate those teaching and express those teaching in our own life. And this is going out of the comfort zone when we start looking at this way. If we're going to be having thousands and thousands of study groups, why is it that we're told to do this? If not to change the world. by small group
right.
at a time, by the influence we're having. So
right.
we need to have a good influence on the people that are looking at us. And
mm-hmm.
for me, this was the example I had from my mother when I started my study group. You know, I told my mother and my sister one day, that was in 1999, that we're going to have a study group in my home. And my mother said, oh, geez, I would love to go. And so did my sister. And I asked them, I said, why do you want to come? Well, because we'd
mm-hmm.
like to study with you. I says, you're not even readers of the Rancho book. Oh, she says, yes, we are. I says, since then, since when? Well, we've been starting to read about 3 years ago. I said, what made you start reading? Is when we saw how much you change. We said, if that book can change that crazy guy, then it must be a good book. And I know who I was. Not that I'm a saint. That's not what I want to say. But I learned from that experience that the little that we do to change ourselves. And study group, this is what it did to me. Because when I was in a study group, I had this commitment, not only to go to the group, but a commitment to become a better person. So why else would I go in a study group? Just to learn intellectually what the book says? No, for me, it was a spiritual way of doing things. You know, it was a project for my own self. And if we can instill that thinking in our members of study groups, and have them come in on that journey, that spiritual journey of transforming oneself, then, you know, we're going to have a great time. And then, really, we're going to have the mission, you know, accomplish the mission we set forth to help the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, expand their cosmic consciousness and, you know, deepen their spiritual perception.
I have another question for you also, Gaetan, where you, I know you have a culture within your study groups now where study group is a place to grow new study group leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying how, you know, you don't want to get too comfortable sort of in your home or primary study group, but you want people within that study group to begin to start new study groups.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about training for that in a study group, or who determines when it's time to start a new group?
Well, when you get more than 8 people, it'd be time for you to look for, you know, a good group, I think, is 8-9 people. When you get more than that, it's getting a little bit of a crowd, you know, not letting everyone express their own view, because it's a lot of people, you know, when you get 12, 15
mm-hmm.
people. I've seen groups with 20 people. And what we try to do in Quebec, when group gets to that level of more than 10 or 8, we're trying to have the host look at who within this group, in his own area, could start a group. And we use our database. We have a database where we have names of readers that tell us when they become, you know, like they want us to have their own data. They tell us if they'd like to be part of a study group. So we use that database. We use all kinds of things, you know, publicizing a little ad in a paper, you know, and different things like this we do to try to attract people. But how do we do it in the study group? Like, sometimes I would have the group be managed by someone else. I would have someone within the group to take over the responsibility of managing the group for that night, and that could last for a month. And have different participants within the group share the responsibility of managing the group. And if they don't want to, we never force anyone. But if they're ready to accept because they've been having an example how to do it, and then they can, you know, they can do it, and they learn from the experience within the group that, oh, wow, this is not so hard. And when we do have people that are ready, well, it's the task of the host to explain the responsibility of a host of the study group to whoever wants to start that group, and not just letting go that person. And another thing we do is when the person wants to start a study group, we commit to attend their study group for a few weeks. So we're there to help them out start that group so they don't feel alone. And so, you know, there are many things we can do. And having meetings with other study groups is another way to help them look into their own groups for people that could start their own group. And if they ever,
mm-hmm.
if they never start, they'll never start. But we need to focus on the idea that we need to help. So the leader of a study group has more than one goal in mind. But it's the leader that needs, you know, like I always say, a failure to plan is a plan for failure. If you don't have a plan, you know, if you're doing things just for the sake of doing it without any goals, well, I always tell people, you know, they're going to discern you the Christopher Columbus trophy, you know. Because Christopher Columbus, when he went, he didn't know where he was going. When he got there, he didn't know where he was. When he came back, he didn't know where he had been.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want people, you know, to be such, you know, like, why did you have a study walk for the fun of it? It's not for the fun of it. It's to do something. It's a, you know, people don't realize what we have sometimes in our hand, the responsibility and the privilege that we have.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
a really
even
good
the Revelator
point.
Said so much, you know. So we need to, how would I say, you know, help people have that feeling, that deep feeling, they're part of something greater. And by being doing their little thing in study groups, they're part of a greater scheme of things, you know, that will help transform this world. But if people don't see the importance of what they're doing, why they're doing it, well, they might not never do the right thing, you know, that, well, they'll do some good things, but they might not be as focused. And when we're focused on something, well, we achieve more. In anything you do, you know, when you're really focused on something, it works better than by not knowing what you're doing. So I believe that the training of leaders is so important, but not as important as for them to understand the real value that they have by being a leader and by wanting to share that experience with others. And this is one of the greatest responsibilities that is given us, except that we take it lightly. You know, a lot of people read the book, but they don't understand, they don't get it, you know, that what they have in their hand is the most important project in this world at this time now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they need something big to make it important. This is so big that they can't catch it sometimes. So we need to have people understand the real value of having study groups. And when
you
they
know,
do
I
understand...
Have...
Yes,
go ahead, Gaetan.
And when they do have, they catch up that thing, then... they'll know how to do it. You know, if they know why they do it, they'll find the why. People are intelligent, but they need to know why they do things. I admire
study group leaders so much because I think they're the unsung heroes of the Urantia movement. And I love Robin Jorgensen's studies in Soho, New York. He's the only study group in New York City for years and years and years and years. And you know, and here's one of the biggest cities in the world, and one study group meeting at Soho in a loft. And Robin told me once they've been meeting for 20 years of doing their study group. Robin told me, I've come to believe that my service is just to be there and open the door. And that just so touched my heart. My service to the revelation is just to be there and open the door.
Right.
And, you know, he has had people, bums who found their book in the garbage. He has had, you know, he could tell you the most amazing stories. But, you know, I really want to ask Buck, too. Buck, you know, I know you've been helping study groups start in foreign countries, and you've been trying to ignite some groups, like when you go to Africa and you went to Nigeria and Cape Town or South Africa, and I know you've traveled extensively in Central and South America. You try to help get study groups going wherever you go. Have you had some success with that?
Well, yeah, you know, again, it's a very interesting dynamic of how that happens. We were very instrumental in getting a study group started in Nigeria when we were there for the book fairs. And in Lagos on the university campus, and so we were very happy to get that started. And then we were recently in Cape Town, South Africa, and you know, I met with the readers down there at the book fair also, and they were a lot like perhaps what Gaetan was talking about, where they had become very kind of complacent within themselves. Even though they had attracted a few new readers, they still didn't feel like they were, you know, operating in a very dynamic way. And so as a result of us leaving them a lot of books, secondary works as well as the main book, the main Urantia book, then that sort of ignited them and instigated them to start doing some more outreach activities, of which they've already started, of which they've already given me some feedback on, that has been successful. So it's very good that sometimes, you know, you go in there and you act as a spark plug almost to kind of get some of that stuff started. But perhaps more importantly, and in a longer view, one of the big questions I get almost everywhere I go is, you know, how do you operate a study group? How do you do it? You know, how do you do a study group, basically? And, you know, for us, we think, well, you know, that's pretty basic, that's pretty simple. But for a lot of people, especially in third world countries, they're not sure because they're used to operating under their cultural conditions, which are often very sort of top-bottom kind of thing. Or
kind of dogmatic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, where they always have somebody telling them what to do and how to do it and when to do it and that type of thing. So for them to understand that a study group is autonomous is sometimes very difficult to grasp and get into. So what I think is needed right now, and I certainly would extend this to Gaetan and Mo Siegel at the foundation, that, you know, I think it would be a wonderful united project if we could unite and maybe do some like 15-minute videos on conducting a study group. You know, again, we don't have to go through the topics, but just, you know, say, okay, now we're going to start doing this or doing that, with several models, you know, like the, you know, we know several models, you know, where you just read consecutively or you read topically or you read helter-skelter. It doesn't matter, but have several 15-minute videos on how to conduct study groups, you know, with some of the dynamics, with some of the leadership concerns. And then, you know, we could do them in English, and then we could have them subtitled in all of our translated languages. And I think that would be a wonderful service to our current readership throughout the world. Mm-hmm. And then I think also that would do a lot then to promote study groups and advance the revelation.
I think that's a really
Absolutely.
Great, a very practical and really good idea, because, I mean, Buck, you and I both know we've had readers from West Africa, for example, who've said, you know, we want to be told how to do this. Like,
exactly.
what is
yeah,
the
exactly.
right way to do this? And like Jesus would say to, you know, his apostles, well, you know, I'm not going to teach you how to pray. You know, I don't want to give you a rote scenario for you to just follow along. I want there to be some creativity or some room for creativity. You know, this is about your personal relationship with God. But even though, you know, he tried really hard to get the apostles to get behind that, they really just didn't know what to do. He just needed to give them sort of a track to run on, because what he was talking about was so different, was so foreign to what they had experienced before, that they, you know, he just had to spend some time with them and sort of give them a track to run on. And when I finally explained to one of the guys that I've been working with overseas that, you know, just frankly, we don't have a set of rules for you to follow. We just don't have that set up. And
mm-hmm.
when I finally said that to him, he was kind of shocked. He's like, wow, you've been doing this for 50 years and you don't have a program? And
yeah, exactly.
I said, well, it's not really that we don't have a program. And then I had to stop and think about it. And I thought, well, actually, yeah, it kind of is
mm-hmm.
that
yeah.
we don't
mm-hmm.
have a program. And this is how some people have done it. This is how
yeah.
some other people have done it. These are the kinds of study groups that I most enjoy. But I know that I'm, you know, that's just my personal opinion. And, you know, the more you participate in a study group, it's true, the more you learn how to do it effectively. And when you think about how many people are lone readers out there or who want to start study groups and haven't had any experience in a study group. So I think that's really – go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt, Chrislyn, but one thing that I wanted to – this is Andrea – I wanted to express is that Joanne and I and another gal named Elizabeth are working on a program called the Study Buddy Program, and it's going to be targeted to people who have written to us and said, you know, we really would like a study group, but we live too far away, or we just don't have the ability to get to a study group. And we're going to put them in touch. We're creating a database, and we'll – have them answer some questions, you know, where they're at, when they're available, whether they're a beginner reader, you know, what their situation is. And then they will be matched up with somebody who would like to study with them. So I think that that would give us a good start matching people up. And, you know, with this new electronic age, there's so much that can be done with Skype groups and, you know, or just listening in to other groups or calling people on the phone. A lot of people have these long distance, you know, like I have a phone where it doesn't cost me anything to call long distance. So you can take advantage of that and have a group on the phone. So we're going to get that set up. It's called the Study Buddy Program. And then the other thought that I was having using technology
is... It's a great idea,
perhaps,
by the way, Andrea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks. Perhaps Joanne's idea. Perhaps to create a website for study groups where they could have an interactive, they could talk to each other, you know, with blogging, you know, back and forth. But then they could also have available how to operate a study group, how to handle, you know, thorny people.
Andrea, this is why the directory of the study group was created, to offer that space where we could have all of this.
Okay,
right.
So is it up and running now? Or?
Yes, it is, but it doesn't provide everything you're talking about, but it could, you know,
it's a growing thing. Let me throw out here, I just took a couple of notes, but I thought if we could have operating a study group, Buck mentioned the videos, we could have some great ideas for topical discussions and perhaps the notes that would go along with it, the ground rules for groups, how to handle new people coming into the group, how to advertise using meetup.com or Craigslist or whatever. And then also, Gaetan, you mentioned how you like to have your group, you know, pass out flyers and, you know, attend expos. So that sort of thing could also be available. But it would be sort of a central clearinghouse for study group leaders to come and get materials and support. I think that would be a really good, and I love that you know, this is not my idea, this is yours. So I'm just throwing out a couple of extra ideas here.
Mm-hmm.
And video idea, too. And by the way, we have a couple of callers who have been on hold for a long time. Can I put them through so they might
please
be able
do.
To?
We've got about 15 minutes.
I know.
Okay.
It always goes so much faster than we expect.
I know. Eric,
well,
I'm glad
Andrea got to put in that idea. And one thing, if we do have time, I'd love for Andrea, if not now, on a subsequent show, to talk about how we get to, you know, first of all, getting people interested in study groups and letting them know that the Arantia book is out there in the first place, how that gets turned from having a presentation about the book to moving a person to having a study group. I think that would be valuable, and we may not be able to cover it and do it justice in the next, you know, 13 minutes.
Well, that was actually one of the things that I was hoping we would be able to get Buck to mention, because it's one of the things they've done after their presentations overseas is they've had an actual model study group for new people who've just found out about the book to come and sort of test drive a study group.
Yeah, it is. It's important. But we have to keep in mind, I mean, we have to sort of remember our sociocentrism, sociocentric thinking. You know, we have to remember that a lot of our readers are third world, and we talk a lot of digital technology stuff, and, oh, it's wonderful for us, and it is. But for a lot of people, you know, they just don't have access to it or a lot of access to that kind of stuff. So, you know, they're looking at, you know, real basic kind of simple stuff that they can use in their, you know,
community. Yeah, not everybody has broadband connection. that they can access.
You know, a lot of people just don't even have internet, you know, and so so how do they do a study group? I mean, that's I mean, we have to keep that piece of it in mind.
Something is
I would add something to Buck's saying is that we have to take into account the different cultures. Sometimes they see things very differently than how we see them. So we need to adapt those ideas to their own cultures.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, let's take our caller, and obviously we're not going to probably get to talk much about the study group network idea, but perhaps we could agree to reconvene and continue this topic again in the very near future.
Hopefully,
yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
I think we should come back pretty quickly.
Caller 310, you are on with us.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you for holding for so long.
All
I sure appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you so much. I love all of you guys. This is Antoinette. I'm out in Los Angeles
now.
Hi, Antoinette.
Hi,
Antoinette.
Hi, Antoinette. Antoinette Hall.
Yes, but that is
so
wonderful.
Glad you called.
Thank you. I've been taking notes as well, too. But one of the things from going to, while we travel, I've been able to attend a lot of different study groups and able to learn how each group kind of conducts themselves. And we used to just start our own group while we were on the road, Pato, myself, and the trumpet player. So we had our own little Trinity group going on until we finally got home and started a group at our house. Once we started the group here and we started to go back on the road, then I suggested, why don't we do Skype, because we didn't want to leave the people that were coming faithfully every week hanging, you know, because we would be gone for weeks or for months. So we decided to start our Wednesday night study group on Skype. Then after we started the Wednesday night study group on Skype, I was like, well, what about your kids over in England? Because they, you know, always want to sit there and be a part of it as well, too. So we started a Wednesday afternoon Skype for the people in the UK and in Europe and Africa as well. And then after, the more study groups you do, the more you start to realize kind of like what's going on with old readers and new readers as well, too, because there has to be a type of balance for everybody to learn and to be able to grasp all the things that so they can understand. We started another group on Tuesdays strictly for new readers, you know, so that way we could even take our time even more, you know, starting with the beginning of the book. So currently we've got three topics going on three times a week. And just like what Gayton was saying, the more that we're studying is also the more that we think about service opportunities and how whatever we're studying is how we can start to implement those things inside of our lives. And then I've really, really witnessed some amazing things happening with the people that are attending the groups, because they're now going out there and just changing how they are with their family, changing things, how they are with their jobs or their friends or their community, and just, like, witnessing some beautiful things. And also, you know, sharing as well, too, introducing to new readers, bringing new people inside the ministry or bringing new people inside the groups and stuff. So as we continue on, I'm hoping that the phone call thing, because that was another thing. There are a lot of isolated readers out there or even new readers. And, you know, when we run into Buck or something or, you know, other newbie readers on the road, we get a chance to say, well, here's somebody else who's a reader or who has a group, which is really good, because then they get a chance to sit there and meet people and invite them into, you know, into their own study, because the people are coming, and they're coming at such a rate, you know, where people are very interested and they want to know more, or they're seeking new truths, you know.
Yeah,
the
momentum is
together.
The momentum is really picking up, and
it is.
You know, for people who think that, you know, it's kind of dead out there, they're really not feeling the momentum that those of us who are involved in the online and out there ministry really can feel the difference. There's a different momentum that's going on now.
And there's
not only that, but I just want to say there's a momentum that is largely unknown to Anglophone readers in cultures, frankly, that are studying the book in other languages and have vibrant Urantia communities coming up. You know, one being here in Quebec, but there's Finland, there's Estonia. You know, there are all these
Colombia
cultures that Colombia, there's Senegal with Moussa Ndiaye.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, there's the whole, you know, Spanish readership as a result of you know, the mixed blessing of J.J. Benitez. But people have come to the Urantia book through that. And this is largely unknown to Anglophone readers. So the multiplication of multilinguists that is talked about in the Urantia book is very, very important. It's going to be our bridge stage to getting to one universal language. You know, readers that have a pie-in-the-sky approach to saying, you know, well, you know what? The first thing we need to do with people that are reading in another language is get them to read the book in English. It's just, you know, we could just ask Gaetan quickly, is that going to happen anytime soon?
Not anytime soon.
You know, there's some people that have a wonderful appreciation of the teachings of the Urantia book that have never read, you know, the English book.
Not only that, they don't even know how to read yet.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's some people out there
that
don't even know how to read.
That's a really big part.
That was that was the exact same thing that I was going to say, was that in another country where the groups, I think I see such a big vibrant rise in the different countries that we went to as well too. And also, and when we can sit there and help out these other groups that are out there, like in Africa or in South America or Costa Rica or something, because they're really struggling down there, you know, with lack of, like, books or with lack of support or lack of different things, you know, that they kind of need, but their groups are growing quickly. And then, like you said, there has to be a certain type of, I don't know what the word is, when you're dealing with the different cultures, just like you said, yeah, I was in Nigeria for 2 months, so I know. You know, even just having a woman take charge is a different, exactly, culture sensitivity. That's the
right.
Thing.
And cultural sensitivity isn't something that's easily taught for someone who has not traveled outside of their country.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, it's one thing to talk about it hypothetically, but, you know, like Gaetan started the show by saying that you really have to sort of have some practical applications for some of these teachings to, you know, really take it out into your life. And it's the same way for working internationally. It all sounds well and good, but a lot of our ideas, a lot of people's ideas about overseas work is based completely on fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And you get out there, and it's you know, for me, obviously, because I grew up overseas, you know, that's something that comes easily for me. And when I was younger, I was really quite judgmental about people who hadn't traveled outside the country or who didn't understand that things were very different elsewhere than they were in North America or in the United States. But, you know, how could they possibly know if they haven't been outside the country?
You can't unless you've experienced it. And can we get this last caller on just briefly? We're so quickly running
out. We've got 3 minutes. You bet. Go ahead.
And area code 614, you are on with us. Thanks for holding.
Oh, hello. This is Scott.
Hi, Scott.
I didn't get to hear the very beginning of the program, and I want to thank you all. It's been very enjoyable, great ideas and comments. I just wanted to talk about an issue that was touched on about sharing information about study groups and about the social interaction of study group hosts. I missed that part at the beginning, but the little history on the study group directory that's up there. At one point, both the social interaction of study group hosts and also a resource for study group hosts was all considered to be part of what the directory was going to contain. And there are two issues there, I think, at least. And one is that when we started to look for good resources for information for study group hosts, a lot of it was dated. There wasn't a really good resource of that. So those who want to find a place on the Internet to put good resources like that, the first part is to develop good resources. And I think we can we probably all need to focus a little bit on that. finding a place for it once they're there will be the small problem. But as far as a social interaction study group host, if we were to have a vibrant, even a Facebook, and there probably are some, but if we were to develop...
Yeah, we started one 4 years ago, but then when they changed the format, we lost all of our members.
Well, we could reinstitute that, because I really like the closed private Facebook networks. We have a couple that I'm a part of. And if we started to have enough people participating in that study group host, I think some of the comments that would be on that social network, if they were extracted, could become the basis for some of these resources that we're talking about on what are some of good ideas on hosting study groups. Just what's been said today alone.
Yeah.
If you could have transcribed it and started to put it into collections, you'd have some fairly good wisdom there.
Well, we can transcribe this, because all this information will be available, you know, within a couple of hours at the end of after the end of the show every week, and I would be willing to do that.
We are at the end of the show.
Which we are. those of us who
30
are
30 seconds, 10 seconds.
I was talking as fast as I could. I'll get off.
No, well, wait, stop before you get
please tune in again in the next couple of weeks. We will continue this topic for those who are listening.
All right.
For those who are still
on,
Scott, thank you for your efforts with the study group directory, and Gaetan, thank you for your efforts in Montreal, and Andrew in Southern California, and Andre, you know, as always, wherever you are, and Buck
and Antoinette,
years and years, and Antoinette, my dear, thank you so much. You and Pato are on the cutting edge, and you see what's happening out there. So you guys are all doing tremendous work for the Revelation, and my heart goes out to you, and however I can help you, and I know Chrislyn feels the same way, and Andre, however we can help on the Cosmic Citizen to maximize your efforts, we're happy to do it.
What I would like to suggest is that we put this in practice immediately by doing one thing, and that is having a study group leaders network meeting at every conference that we put together. That if we can commit to that, even just the people who are here today, to saying that from here on out, every conference, every regional meeting that we have will contain a separate study group host or study group leaders networking meeting, where it's kind of like a support group, where people can share ideas, and where it's a safe place to discuss the good and the bad, you know, the problems and the successes that we're having. Right. And to be able to share those things with each other, I think, would make a big difference.
I agree. And training is important, and I think, Gaetan, if you got anything across, you really got that across, and we all got it. Training is important. Materials are important.
Mm-hmm.
A video is a great idea, Buck. I love that idea, because it could so easily be shared with our friends in third world countries. And like you said, it wouldn't be that hard to translate it. And gosh, it's such a great idea.
Subtitles, more than a subtitle, would be easy and cheap.
Yeah, subtitles
are easy.
Yeah, that's what I was
getting
at.
What I can do, Paula, is have the material that I've given to the OSA study group in Quebec translated in English. Some of it is already in English, but assembled the way I did it in French. And make it available in a folder that I could share online.
Well,
right.
And if there's any way that I could help you with that, Gaetan, I would really like to volunteer to help with that. This is something very near and dear to my heart. And I talked with you about this briefly after your presentation in Montreal at the Tufts Festival, and I just never did get a chance to follow up. So I'm really, really grateful that you came on, that you agreed to come on with us today.
It was a pleasure.
And I hope we can do this again in the very near future.
I hope so, too. Thank you
very
much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Kingdom come.
Yes, great to
you. Okay, thank you. I need
Thanks
to go.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Okay, God bless
God
you
all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
God
Talk
bless
you
everyone.
Soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Rancho Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.